Johns Hopkins University, and I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. It'll load in a sec, no problem. Afternoon, everybody. So I know that we have questions at the end, so I'll try and keep it pretty brief. What we'll be talking about today is setting budgets and priorities at the state health agency level. So it'll be a different facet of what we've been hearing from the rest of the panel today, but I hope is still very relevant. So with that, I have no disclosures, unfortunately, to make. I'll note that this is a joint ASTO and Hopkins venture, and so we, of course, jointly worked on the conceptualization and execution of the project. I'd like to thank the Johns Hopkins PERC for funding part of this project, but we'll note they did not participate in the conceptualization or execution of it. I'm here talking today on behalf of the project team, Tom Burke, Beth Resnick, myself at Hopkins, Katie Sellers at ASTO, and with great thanks to Nancy Cass and Joe Berger from Hopkins, as well as ASTO staff, as well as the state health officials and their staff, of course, for participating. So, you know, as I'm sure we're all acutely aware, state health agencies are key players in governmental public health. They're the guarantors of communicable disease control and prevention. In some states, they're responsible for clean air, clean food, clean water. In some states, they're responsible for the provision of safety net care. But no matter their responsibilities, all are facing difficult financial times. And so it's of particular interest how different states and in different circumstances are dealing with these problems. And what's more, since about the economic downturn, a lot of the cuts that the state health departments are experiencing have been pretty cumulative. And this does kind of trickle down to the local level as well, of course, given the important role that states, state health departments play in funding and working with local health departments. I'll also note, before I move on here, one of the other reasons we wanted to do this work was because there hadn't been a lot of empirical work done in the resource allocation literature. There's been some really good stuff out of North Carolina, excellent stuff out of Michigan, and soon out of Washington State, but that really focuses at the local level, and here we're going to be looking at the state level. So with that said, what you'll hear from me today are the results of the first of a two-stage mixed methods project. In this first stage, we conducted 45 interviews across six state health departments, and in each state health department, we talked with seven or eight leaders in each of those places. And by that I mean leaders at the executive level, the chief executive, senior deputy, CFO, legislative liaison or governmental affairs official, as well as the head of three departments in particular, preparedness, environmental health, and maternal child health. So these six states were selected based on trying to get good geographic representation as well as relative per capita spending and some organizational characteristics, like whether they were a centralized state or whether they were a super agency versus not, were also kind of taken into account when we were selecting. So on to the results. We'll talk here today about maybe two, maybe three types of results we got relating to resource allocation decision making, the first being criteria. This list here are themes that emerged throughout the course of these interviews when individuals were talking about the most important decision drivers when making these difficult resource allocation decisions. And I'll note that the bold ones are those that were discussed as kind of the most important or perhaps ultimately driving these decisions. So perhaps unsurprisingly for any practitioners in the room, there are items you'd very much expect to see that are very intuitive. Things like magnitude of the problem, seriousness of the consequences, whether the service was mandated in law or regs or was effectively mandated by a federal match requirement. But there are also a couple ones that are interesting and we'll talk a bit more about today. Political interests and politics, as you might imagine, came up quite a bit. But I'll talk about that in one second. I'd like to focus for right now on this bolder one called mission critical. And that is separating out the nice-to-haves from the must-haves in the view of the respondent. And it's something that you haven't necessarily seen in the literature previously, but was came through extremely clearly at all these states. And I'll let the following quote from a respondent illustrate it. So you've got to ask yourself, number one, is it mission critical? Because there's a lot of mission creep that gets into any organization, and we have people that have applied for grants that, because they're out there or it sort of relates to what they're doing, but it's not really part of our mission. It's not something that we need to be doing, and that's really what our local legislature is trying to get agencies to focus on. In addition to these top criteria, of course, as you might imagine, given that we're talking with lots of different people in these six states, other criteria came up as well. And by second-tier criteria, I mean those that were perhaps less common or not talked about as being top decision drivers. And again, a lot of these are going to be intuitive, whether something was an emerging issue that needed to be dealt with, the cost effectiveness of a particular service, whether it built or eliminated capacity within a department. Another one that I'll go back for just one second, this notion of being able to be delivered by others is something that came up pretty frequently, but is also relatively new. State health departments, the ones that we talked to, and certainly something that we're seeing in the preliminary results of our national survey, suggest that that's one of the things that they're really looking at. Can somebody else in the community deliver these services? And sometimes there are caveats. Can they deliver them as cheaply or as well? But it's definitely a pretty big consideration. I'll also note that there were some uncommon criteria, those that were mentioned only a few times or perhaps were unique mentions, but were pretty interesting nonetheless. In the interest of one of the equity themes today, I'll point to what actually was a unique mention for whether something was equity promoting. And I'll bring this one up because whether a service targeted a vulnerable group or reduced disparities came up, but also here, for this particular respondent, they talked about whether an item was equity promoting per se as having additional value when they were making tough decisions between equally compelling services. And similarly, actually, for population-based, this is something you would expect to see quite a bit, right? At least maybe it's something that I expected to see, that if something was population-based versus a direct service, some groups might place more value on it. But it's not something that we saw come up a lot, and it's something we're keeping a close eye on in the national survey. So this is a tag cloud, and by that I mean it's the words that respondents used when talking about resource allocation criteria are kind of key to how frequently these words came up. And while we kind of look this over, I'd like to talk about a couple other key points that came up in resource allocation criteria. And politics through and through was a very big challenge and certainly a key consideration when these decisions were being made. But it wasn't necessarily the end-all, be-all of priority setting. And by that I mean respondents clearly communicated that politics was part and parcel of the budget and priority setting processes in their states, but the level of influence really differed. And this level of influence was due in part to how well their chief executive could manage the outside influence, and that you might expect is a function of experience or maybe luck. But a lot of it, in terms of how respondents talked about it, really came by way of more mechanical or physical characteristics of what they deal with. And by that I mean the relationship of the state health department to the governor's office. Things like whether they put out their own budget versus sending that internally, right, made a very big difference. The relationship to the legislature, whether they were to serve as experts or could advocate for funds or particular programs or priorities, how often the legislature meets, whether it's a 90-day legislature, whether it's a legislature that meets full-time, really came up as one of the things that modulated, if you want to put it like that, the role of politics in this sort of decision-making. Another component of resource allocation that we looked at was what we're calling hard choices. And for this section, respondents were asked a seemingly innocuous question, and that is, what makes something a hard choice? But I was surprised by the tremendous variation of answers that we got here. Again, those in bold are ones that came up perhaps most frequently, talked about at the most length, spontaneously, or with the most emotion in some cases. You know, one thing I'd like to point out here in terms of what the data suggest is that for division heads, those leading preparedness, environmental health, maternal child health, they identified bureaucracy or politics getting in the mix as a bigger problem for them, or in terms of something that makes the choices harder than those at the executive level. And we're still looking into what that means, and we'll be looking to the national survey to see if that holds. But we found that very interesting. Far and away, though, the most important item, or the one that made the choices hardest in respondents' view, was the impact on staff. And by that I mean layoffs or cutting staff or firing staff. And just far and away, I was actually pretty surprised at how pervasive this idea was. And it broke out into three main categories, if you want to put it like that. The first was most common, certainly talked about with the most emotion, the idea that you have to sit across the table from someone who you know, maybe you've worked with for a long time, maybe they're your friend, or maybe you know their family, but you have to lay them off, and you know in the end that that's going to have some adverse impact on them personally. And that caused a lot of consternation for the respondents. The second idea, I think, is a little more straightforward, though came up less commonly. And that was just, as you were asked to make these difficult choices, laying off staff, you diminished your capacity, capability, expertise to do your job. And over time, that can make things very difficult. And finally, perhaps less commonly, I would say, was this idea that if you needed to make layoffs, you could cause a lot of discord in your health department, but not because of the people who you fire, but because of the people who they bump. And that's something that you see sometimes in civil service, the idea of senior people bumping lower staff. So if a senior person's position is cut, maybe they can take the position of a lower staff member. And I'll let the following quote from respondent kind of give you this idea. So when you lay off staff, usually in a governmental area, especially in this state, we have bumping. The most senior staff bump the least senior staff, and in many cases, the least senior staff are more capable than some of the other staff. And you see very good people who have devoted a lot of time and energy to this place, but don't have as many years. And so you wind up losing these individuals, and the agency as a whole is less for it, even given the money you've saved. I think in the interest of time, I'm probably going to pop over this slide. We can come back to it in questions if we want to. The idea with this slide is respondents encountered many trade-offs. So you can't make decisions when a governor is asking you to cut 5 or 10% from your budget and say, I'm just going to protect these maternal child health clinics. I'm going to protect these maternal child health clinics at the expense of environmental health or communicable disease control or something else, right? You're not making decisions in a vacuum. And with that idea in mind, these are the sorts of trade-offs, that came up. But we can come back to those if we have the time. So in terms of limitations for this project, I think that for transferability, there's reasonable concern that even though we have a large sample, 6 out of 50 states and the leaders in those states, because of the heterogeneity of the context that I mentioned earlier, that each state is kind of its own being, the idea that if you've seen one state health department, you've seen one state health department, means that even though we have good representation, I think, of the states we did select, it doesn't ensure that that these results are kind of transferable to other states working perhaps a bit differently. And that's one of the reasons we decided to go with a mixed methods approach. In terms of credibility and dependability, we wanted to make sure that when we talked with respondents, that the questions we asked were what we meant to ask, and that everybody was on the same page. And so to this end, we pilot tested with 9 former health officials in one capacity or another, 2 former state health officials, as well as senior deputies, CFOs, and division heads. So in terms of next steps, as I mentioned, the stage 2 national survey is in the field right now. And if stage 1 here, what we talked a bit about today is creating some of the map of what resource allocation looks like at the state level, state health department level, then this national survey will help to populate that for us and tell us what's really on that map. And we're also looking at combining these findings with some of the likely federal austerity measures that might come out quite soon and look at potential pressures and potential opportunities, best practices that members might want to utilize. So with that in mind, thanks very much, and I'm happy to turn it back over.